doesn't matter who we are. What matters is our plan. You should have respected my authority.
And welcome to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and today is October 25th, 2012, and we've got a lot to go through. Actually, we have a ton of newsity, but we're not going to go through that currently, because we have so many interviews from NondeskCon 2012 that we haven't put up yet. In fact, I'm going to put a bunch of them up in here, along with some music from games like Code of Princess and some of the other upcoming games. So there's going to be there's a bunch of stuff in here here today. You're going to like it. I had this huge political rant thing, which I've spared you by cutting it out. Probably. Maybe I'll do that later. But yeah, we've got a bunch of interviews today. We've got a bunch of stuff to put out there. So Newsity is getting pushed into another section, into another episode, especially since there's also a Nintendo Direct today in a couple hours, and I need sleep. So anyways, here you go. This is your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth for Radio DMG on October 25th, 2012. And let's go ahead and cue the music. The following interview is with Masao Maruyama. He is a director of various shows, and he is the co-founder of Studio Madhouse. He's been in the animation film as an animation film producer for almost 50 years. This interview was done with a translator and myself, so I speak a little bit slower in a way to help the translator. So that is an explanation of what you're about to hear. And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here at NondeskCon 2012 with our guest.
Maruyama desu. Yoroshiku onegaishimasu.
This is your interpreter, T. Kawahashi.
Now, a lot of people may not know who you are and what it is that you do. So, who are you and what do you do?
リスナーは、丸山さんのことを詳しく知らないかもしれませんので、はい軽く自己紹介をお願いします。
はい、日本のアニメーションを約50年やっております、日本のアニメーション、テレビのアニメーション鉄腕アトムが始まった時からまだ現役で頑張っております。71歳です。
Well, I've been working in the animation industry in Japan for the past 50 years, ever starting with the very first animated show, Tetsuwan Adam, Astro Boy, and I'm still been working at it without retiring. I'm 71 years old now.
So, you started your work on Tetsuwan Adam, Astro Boy. What was it like working with forgot his name. The mangaka who drew and created Astro Boy.
Tezuka?
Oh, Osamu Tezuka. What was it like working with Osamu Tezuka?
Tetsuwan Atom の時代から元気ということは、手塚治虫さんは、の下で仕事するのはどんな感じでしたか？
はい、まだ僕らが アニメ界に入った時にはそのアニメーションっていうのはどういうものなのか全く分からなくて、MC プロダクションに入りました。手塚治虫さんのいろんな指示に従って、仕事を覚えました。
When we got started in the anime industry, we had no idea what the animation was all about. So we all followed some Tezuka's instructions and then learned on the spot.
You got involved in animation at a very young age. What inspired you to enter that particular field?
丸山さんも若くして、そのアニメーションの仕事を始めたわけですけども、どういった動機で、その分野に入ったわけですか？
さっき言ったように、まだアニメーションという仕事が定着してない時です。虫プロダクションという会社ができて、手塚さんがアニメーションを始めたんですけども、そこに参加したスタッフは僕も含めてほとんどアニメーションがどういうものかわからないで、仕事に入りました。
And, this was a time when animation was not really established as a field yet, and so all the staff members who joined Tezuka's production, Mushi production, did not really know what we were getting into.
According to your biography from Nandescon, you were born in 1941. What do you remember growing up during and after World War II? If you have anything to say about any memories growing up during World War II and after it?
なんですかんの、丸山さんの紹介文によりますと生まれは1941年のこと、はい、とのことですけども、戦中戦後っていうのは、どんな感じだったか。
戦中戦後ですか。一応生まれたのは戦中になるんでしょうけれども物事を覚えるというか育ったのは戦後ですんであまり戦中のことに関しては僕は分かりません。
Well, I may have been born during the war, but that's not where my memory goes back to. That would be most all post-war.
In your time from when you began in the anime industry, the animation industry, to where you are today, how do you feel the industry has grown during your time in it?
アニメの仕事を始めた時から今に至って日本のアニメ業界というのはどのように道を歩んできましたか。
最初から現在までやたら忙しい、スタッフで、頑張っているということですが最初の20年ぐらいは日本のアニメーションが定着するというか日本中にこう評価される時間が必要だったのだと思います。それから海外含めて、もちろんアメリカも中心に日本のアニメーションがいろいろ世界中に評価されて、進出したことが最初の20年とは随分違ってるなと思います。
So since the beginning until today, I've been just busy with all the staff involved. But in the first 20 years of the industry, I think that was the time when the medium was trying to get established. And since then, animation as media has gotten to be recognized, not just domestically, but also overseas. And so I think that's been the biggest change after the 20 years.
Where do you feel the industry should be going or will be going in the future with the advent of the internet and the openness of media? It's very easy for people to find and acquire items and in this global this larger market. How do you feel that will affect animation in the future?
そしてこのインターネット時代、何でも簡単に見つかり手に入る時代にこれに前はなりましたけども、そういった中で、アニメーション業界、日本のアニメ業界はこれからどのような方向に進んでいくべき、進んでいると丸山さんは思いますか？
日本のアニメーションそのものはあまり変わらないと思うんですね。ただかインターネット時代になってかつて海外とはタイムラグがあったのがこれからなくなっちゃう、まあ、同じように息をして同じように呼吸して、同じタイミングで物を見たり考えたりするようになるだろうと、そういう意味でもっとさらにグローバルな視点で物を作っていかなくちゃないとは思っております。
I think the Japanese anime itself will not change so much. But because of the accessibility, all the release schedules will be much more simultaneous. There won't be a time lag as there used to be. And so that's the kind of global audience I think that the animation industry needs to keep in mind as we keep on making new material.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the tools...that animation is made with have changed over the years. We've gone from hand-painted cells to CG computer graphics, computer-generated imagery, and digital paint cells. Do you feel that the advent of technology has increased the ability to create animation or decreased the originality of the animation? Meaning...Does the advent of new tools make more anime or more animation look too similar?
そして、この、時代を経るにつれて、アニメーション制作の、そのツールも変わってきているわけで、昔は手塗りの、セルだったものが今は、コンピューターの CG であったりデジタルプリントになってきているわけですけども、これによってアニメーションの表現力というのは広がりましたでしょうか。それとも、オリジナリティの方では、その見た目が似たような作品が、増える傾向にあるでしょうか。
後者だと思います。比較的似たものが増えているのは現実です。ただ日本のアニメーションというのは多分世界中で一番幅が広い、大人ものからハードなものまで、の大人ものハードなものから子供ものかわいいものまで非常に幅が広いので、同系統が増えてはいるものの相変わらず裾野が広いというか、いろんなものがいっぱいあって、それがその強さがなくなるということはないと思います。
I think the latter is more applicable, and there are much many more similar looking titles today, but I think Japanese animation of all the animated industries in the world has the most diverse range of stories fromthe mature audience hardcore stories all the way to the kids shows. And I think there might be more similar shows, but the diversity of subjects will continue to hold up in, as Japanese animation.
Mm-hmm. You've made a lot of very diverse films and TV series from each other. Is there a particular genreof story that you prefer over another?
丸山さんは、いろんな幅の広い、フィルムや、テレビシリーズを手掛けてきましたけども、この中で、特定に、一番好きなジャンルというのは何かありますか？
いろんなことができるのが、いろんなジャンルのものができることがとても楽しいので、特にこういうジャングルというような決まりはないです。むしろいろんな仕事がいろんなスタイルのものができることがとても楽しく、それぞれ得意な分野の監督とか絵描きさんと一緒に仕事できることが一番楽しいです。
Well, the best part of my job is that I get to work on a diverse range of subjects. And so, So I'm always going to have fun working with different directors and different animators whose strengths vary depending on the genre they work, and that will be my enjoyment.
Mm. One of the directors that you worked with was Satoshi Kon. What was it like working with him?
そして、丸山さんが一緒に仕事をなさった監督の一人が、コンサートしたんですけども、彼と仕事するのはどんな感じでしたか？
もうとてもいいようがないぐらいこうエキサイティングな仕事だったと思います。
The excitement of working with Satoshi Kon was beyond words.
Mm-hmm. The we've seen many different trends in animation from Sentai to the current crop of Moe titles. Do you find it difficult sometimes to resist the basic trends of the industry and to go toward because I don't all right, the question would be, there are various trends that anime tends to follow, where you may have more violent or sentai type films during the 80s and 90s to the more moe and films of today. Does he find it hard to resist the trends or to go with the trends?
そして、アニメ作品というには、その流行り廃れがあったりで、例えば80年代、90年代、もっと、このバイオレンスや、戦闘主体の、戦隊番組が、もっと流行っていて、今世紀になってもっと、萌え物が流行ってたりしますけども、丸山さんが作る中では、その流行りに従う方が楽ですか、それともその流行りに、逆らう作り方というのが丸山さんの作りになりますか。
いや、作り方としては迎合もしない代わりに独特に自分の世界だけにこだわることもありません。作品によって昔風のものであれ、今風のものであれ、チャレンジしたいと思ってます。
Well, for me, my style neither conforms nor or does not defy current trends. And working with the retro styles or current, whatever is part of the creative work.
How do you feel that? Wait, actually, let me think.If you are not given the opportunity to work in the animation industry, where do you feel you would be currently? Where do you feel you would be working had you not gone into the animation industry?
もし丸山さんが、そのアニメ業界で、仕事をする機会がなかったとしたらば、今どのような、ことをしていたと思いますか？
あまりそういうことを思ったことがないので、やっぱりアニメをやってるかなと思いますけれども、それ以外だとしてならば、旅行が好きで、あちこちコンベンションなんか渡り歩ってるんで、旅行案内人かスタッフと一緒にご飯を作って食べるのが大好きなんで、コックさんだったかなと思います。
Well, this isn't something that I've given much thought, so I probably would have ended up in animation anyway. But I do love to travel, and I go to a lot of conventions, as you can see. So I may have ended up being a travel guide, or since I do love to cook for my studio staff, perhaps I may have ended up being a chef.
いずれにしろアニメに関わってるってことですよね。
But either way, this somehow involves being close to animation.
Going to the thought about cooking, are there any particular dishes that he prefers to cook, or that you feel you are especially talented at cooking?
でその料理の方では、その特定の得意料理、もしくは、好きな料理というのはありますか？
いや全くないです。何でも好きでしたし、一応何でも素人料理ができます、みんなでスタッフと一緒にご飯を食べるのが好きで、というだけです。
There's no particular preference. I can pretty much make anything as an amateur, and it's basically I love eating with my staff. So that's the main point of cooking for them.
美味しいものを食べたかったら外へ行って、お金を出して食べればいいので、僕のところで食べるのは美味しいか美味しくないかじゃなくて、みんなと一緒に笑ったり騒いだりしながらご飯を一緒に食べれるかどうかが一番大事なことです。
Because if you wanted tasty food, you can pay out of pocket and eat out. You don't eat my cooking for the taste. It's really to be eating and having a good time together with everyone.
よく失敗をするんですけども、今日のは美味しくないなと思うことがあるんですけども、スタッフは今日結構気を使って美味しい美味しいと言ってくれます。
And, I do make mistakes with my recipes, but the staff seem to pretend to ignore that and then say that it's great tonight.
Because working on an animated film or an animated show can be very stressful, It appears that cooking is one of the ways that you help keep morale high with the staff and with your crew. What other ways do you encourage your crew to keep their spirits up?
このアニメの制作というのは、ストレスのたまる、仕事のように見受けますけども、そのスタッフのために料理するというのはその、ストレスをスタッフのストレスを解消する一つの、方法じゃないかと見受けますが、他にはそのスタッフの士気を維持するためには何か気遣いというのはありますか？
基本的にはストレスがあるのは当たり前のことだと思ってます。非常に多くの人間が関わって、それぞれ性格も違うし、一つのものを作っているのはいろんな難しいことができていきます。それぞれと細かいことで、納得するまで話し合って、チームを組んでいくことが僕のやり方だと思ってます。
I think on the job stress is a given because you have a lot of staff members, all of them with different personalities, and there would be disagreements and clashes. But keeping the combination of personalities going is basically what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. And how do you personally unwind or get rid of that stress after?The production of a show or a movie is over.
そして、その作品の、制作が終わった後、丸山さん自身はどのように個人的に溜まったストレスを解消してますか？
いや、僕はあまりストレスの溜まらないタイプです。常にストレスは溜めないようにしてます。そのご飯を作ることもそうだし、例えば一つの仕事終わった時には次の仕事のことを面白くやろうということを一生懸命やると、そのストレスが溜まっていくというよりも、溜まる暇もなく次のことに突入するという形でやっております。
I tend not to bottle up my stress. Cooking is one way, and when I'm about to finish one title, I'm already thinking about what to do on my next title, and just keep on just and My stress doesn't build up just because I keep on going.
一番ストレスがたまるのは何かというと、お金が儲からないっていうことです。で、お金がどんどん出てってしまって、作品を作ることに逼迫していくことがとてもストレスになります。これは正しい。お金を儲けるために仕事をしてるわけじゃないんで、仕方がないことだと思ってます。いい作品作るためにはやむを得ないこと。そのストレスなら引き受けていこうと思ってます。
The biggest source of stress is when a title isn't selling, so that we're bleeding cash. But since I'm not in this line of work to make money, the best reward is to keep on making quality titles. And so if that's my goal, then losing money is not the biggest concern that I have to worry about.
How do you choose the people you would like to work with or produce shows or movies with when you choose them?
作品のスタッフというのは選ぶときはどのようにして選んでいますか？
もともとその50年もやってるとほとんどのスタッフとお付き合いがあるので、その作品に合った人、なおかつスケジュールがなかなかそれぞれの人がいろんなものを抱え込んでて、自分が思ったスタッフと組めるかどうかは分からないので、その都度考えて、折り合うところで、スケジュール、お金、内容、それらが折り合うところでチョイスします。
Well, since I've been working in the industry for 50 years, you pretty much know everyone, and it's just a matter of finding staff members who would be suitable for a particular title, who also has the schedule available, and to make sure that the personnel, the budget, and the schedule all mesh up together.
Are there currently any directors or creators that you prefer to work with?
今、丸山さんが一緒に、仕事を、しやすい、特定の監督及び、クリエイター、原作者、クリエイターなどいますか？
今までやった人とはトラブってないので、トラブルが少ないので、またやりたいと今までやった人は全員とそう思ってますが、まあ、自分でやれることは数が少ないので、作品を絞っていかないといけないかなと思ってます。
There hasn't been much trouble with the past creators or staff members that I work with, that hasn't been a concern. There's only a limited amount of work that I can do one at a time, so I have to choose which titles to work on at any given moment.
まあ、実績のある人は他でも、他のプロデューサーでも、他の会社でもできるので、なるべくまだ組んだことない人と仕事がやっていければ楽しいかなと思ってます。
And, anyone who already has an established track record can pretty much do well under any other producer as well. So I tend to cherish the opportunity to work with someone that I've never worked with before.
Are there any that you have not worked with yet that you would like to work with in the future?
今まで一緒に仕事をしたことのない人でこれからやっていきたいと思う人は誰かいますか？
いっぱいあります、いっぱいいます。それは今この段階で固有名詞は出せないですけども、来年とか再来年とかでその人とやってる、今計画中なんで発表できると思います。
There are really a lot of such people, and I can't give out any proper nouns right now, but that's what I have in mind for my work next year and next year.
例えばこの間やった渡辺慎一郎君というのは、坂道のアポロンというのをやったんですけど、彼とは一緒にやろうと10年ぐらいずっと言ってて、坂道のアポロンが初めてのチームでした、そういうふうに実績がある人でもない人でも一緒にやれると嬉しいかなと思って出る人は数人おります。
For example, Shinichiro Watanabe, who recently I worked with on the Kids on the Slope, is someone that I've always wanted to work with for the past 10 years. And it took me this long, but this is one example of me working with someone who I've always wanted to work with and who I've never worked with before.
まあ、細田守君なんかも東映でやってたのを時をかける少女の時に初めて組んで、その後がサマーワーズと というふうに続いていくので、初めての人と組むのは僕にとってはすごく刺激的で楽しいことです。
and, and another example is Mamoru Hosoda、mm-hmm. and he was at Toei before and, the, and I worked with him for the first time when, on the girl who left through time and after that it was Summer Wars、it's something I always cherish and find exciting to work with someone I've never worked with before、
hmm.Hmm. The this one is this question. When you work with a lot of work a lot with animation or with traveling for conventions or so, what do you feel is the proper balance between time spent at work and away and time spent at home with family? How do you balance the two?
So.このように、仕事で多忙な時もしくは、コンベンションなどで、旅がちな時、というのは、その、仕事場にいるのと、その家にいる時間というのはどのようにバランスを、取っていますか？
もうバランスは全くないですね。仕事を24時間やってる日と翌日がゼロだったり、バランスが全然ないのがこの仕事の特徴だと思って、それに耐える精神と体力が必要です。続けていくにはね。
Well, there is no balance in my line of work. Some days you're working 24 hours a day. Another day you might be getting zero work. But this is the kind of environment that you have to endure, and that's what it takes to be in the industry.
Mm-hmm. On your project, Kids on the Slope, could you explain why the American audience should be excited for this project?
坂道のアポロン、アメリカンオーディエンスとしては、どのようなものを、楽しみにすれば良い見方になりますか？
これはアメリカのオーディエンスだけじゃなくて、特にそこを意識してないし、日本のスタッフだけを、日本のお客さんだけを相手にもしてません。やっぱり青春、若者の心と音楽というのは世界中、日本でもアメリカでも共通する要素だと思うんで、あまり特定の人に向けて、ものを語ってません。若い人、かつて若い人も含めて、これから若い人になる人も含めて、若者に向かって、音楽とアニメーションをアピールしていきたいと思って企画して制作しました。
Kids on the Slope was not meant for specifically for an American audience, but neither is it for a Japanese audience. I've always thought that youth and music is a combination that's always been a common theme for any audience, be it Japanese or American. And so the show is meant for someone who is currently young, or someone who used to be young, and someone who will be young, and their endeavor in music、mm. and experience in youth is basically what there is to enjoy in the show.
唯一坂道アポロンで言えるとするならば、日本のちょっと前の要するに輸入音楽というかジャズが日本に定着する時代のお話なんです。したがってアメリカを中心に展開したジャズの音楽を日本の若者がどう受け止めていったかというところは、丁寧にその音楽もしっかりした形で音楽をちゃんとアニメーションとして、やりたいなと思って、描きました。
There's one specific thing about the show, and that this takes place in JapanIn a time when jazz music was foreign to Japan, when it was being imported, and so that's the part of the show. of the story of how that I spent time. I made sure that was depicted in detail how the young characters were learning jazz, and how they it was being established in Japan as a genre of music.
さっきその話に出た僕が戦後どうだったっていうことで言うと、まあ、あの少年からちょっと大人に二十歳代になる頃に一番衝撃的だったのは日本の文化よりもアメコミだったりジャズだったり要するにアメリカから流れてきた文化ということに非常に興味を持ちました。それを今アメコミっぽいアニメーションだとかジャズっぽい音楽だとか今一回以降自分の中でリファインして、描けるということはとても嬉しいことです。
You asked me earlier about how it was growing up in post-war Japan、mm-hmm. and that was a time when I was going through my adolescence into my youth in my 20s and that was a timeWhen there was a lot of foreign, especially American influences coming into Japan mm-hmm. culturally, such as American comics or jazz mm-hmm. music, and those were my my fresh cultural influence. And I find it very exciting that I can redevelop those themes in as well American comic style animation or jazz influenced anime, and put that back into the genre.
So, you feel that the use of jazz music or the influence of that culture has helped lift the spirits of the youth, essentially?
では、当時の若者の、の気概をその、ジャズや読み込みの影響というのは、その気概を上げるのに役立っていたと。
ものすごくですね。日本の文化が広がっていく、日本的なものだけじゃないということになっていくに関し、ことに関しては、絶対必要だったものというふうに思ってます。
I think that kind of foreign influence was an absolute necessity into widening the diversity of Japanese culture back then.
In the most recent decade, we've seen a rise in nationalism in Japan, and we've also seen the rise of what's referred to essentially as a hikikomori phenomenon. What culture do you feel should be brought into Japan or imported into Japan to help with this particular issue to lessen the influence of that particular phenomenon?
この10年、日本では、国粋主義が、の上昇が見受けられ、また、若者の間では、いわゆる引きこもりという現象が、流行ってきているようですけども、どのような、その外国からの文化的な、文化的な触発があれば、このような、傾向というのは、和らげることができると思いますか？
これは日本だけの問題ではなく世界的な潮流ではないかと僕は少なくとも思ってます、日本だけが変わって日本だけが良くなるってこともないように世界のいろんな人と相談しながらやっていきたいなと思ってます。
Well, I think this is an issue that's not specific to JapanBut is something that you can see worldwide. So I don't think there's something that could improve just Japan, but something that we all need to talk about and find a solution to.
When a show that you have produced does not find an audience, do you reflect on that?Going into your project after it, or do you just put it aside and just go forward?
丸山さんの手掛けた作品が、そのオーディエンスを見つけられなかった時、それその、その反映というのは次の作品に現れますか、それとも、それは、捨てて次の作品作りに進むわけですか。
全く誰も受け取らないってことはないです。必ず作ったものは誰かに伝えられるものだと思ってます。それがものすごい量で受け止められるか、一部の人にしっかり受け止められるかは、これは何とも判断できないので、なるべく長い間10年経っても 見てもらえるもの、受け止めてられるもの、受け止めてもらえるものを作ろうと常に思ってます。
I think that's never the case that, that there is no audience for anything that's been made. There's always going to be someone who accepts the work that's been made. It's just a matter of whether it's a very wide audience or if it's very specific as an audience. But that's not something that I could completely measure, judge making, going into making a title. What I make sure is to make something that can withstand the test of time. That's something that would still be valid 10 years forward.
You've traveled to many, many conventions. What do you feel about non-descon so far in Colorado?
丸山さんは、ほぼの、コンベンションに、いらしてますけども、今回の non-descon というのは、どんな感じですか？
今日オープニングだったんで、今回がどうかということに関してはまだ分かりませんが、やはり、アメリカの お友達が日本のアニメーションが好きでいてくれることは僕らにとってはとても嬉しいことですし、いつでもどこでも行って一緒にお話をしたいと思ってます。
Well, since Nandiscon just started today, so I can't really comment on how Nandiscon's going this year. But I always love it's very rewarding for me to see American friends like the work that I've done, and I would always love to travel and go talk to friends and then listen to what they have to say.
There is a lot of energy, even evident in the opening ceremonies at these conventions. How does this reception in the U.S. compare to the reception at, say, Comic-Con or various conventions over in Japan?
で今回なんですかんでも、その開会式を見ますと、とても、みんなのエネルギーを感じることができますけども、このような、やり取り受け入れ方というのは、例えば日本でのイベント、コミケや他の日本でのコンベンションなどとはどのような、に比べられますか、比較になりますか。
原則は同じだと思うんですが、日本のコンベンションよりもはるかにオープンな感じがして、とても僕は好ましいなと思ってます。さっき言った引きこもりってことが出ましたが、日本のアニメ好きは割とこう自分の世界の自分たちだけ、自分だけなんとなくこう狭い範囲で、アニメと付き合ってるのが、まあ海外のコンベンション、アメリカのコンベンションでは非常にオープンな感じがして、僕は大好きです。
I think the reception of the fans is pretty much the same. But one thing I like about the conventions over here and at Nandiscon is how open the fans are. As you mentioned about hikikomori earlier, Japanese fans tend to be more shelled up, clammed up into their own world, and so I like the openness of the fans that I see more overseas.
Sometimes after a convention, many American fans also tend to be more reserved or to clam up, and Are there any suggestions that you could give them or the Japanese fans to be more open?
アメリカのファンでも、コンベンションが終わった後だとまた自分たちの世界に、閉じこもって、閉じこもる人たちも大勢いるわけなのですが、そのようなファンや、日本の、もっと、閉じこもりっぱなしのファンのような人たちに、何かアドバイスはありますか？
いえ、僕はこうやって時折みんなで集まってみんなで楽しむってことがあれば、それぞれ家帰って自分一人で、アニメーションもしくは自分の仲のいい友達だけで、話題を共有するということでも別にそれは悪いことではないと思います。両方ともあればいいんじゃないかなと思ってます。
Well, I think as long as friends can get together at occasions such as these kind of conventions, it's perfectly alright for someone to go back into their own world or into a small collection of friends afterwards, and if they can balance getting together and then spending time alone, I think that's completely fine for them.
Mm-hmm. What are you expecting from NONDESCON this year?
今年の NONDESCON には何を期待してますか？
いえ、ですからお祭り気分というか、一年に一回みんなで集まって楽しむということはできるんじゃないかなと思ってます。
And that would be the once a year gathering and festivities.
And for a bit of a lighter closing question, you spoke about the influence of jazz music in Kids on the Slope and in some of your earlier life. What artists in jazz do you feel are the best and are most representative of that genre?
で、先ほど、アポロンおよび、丸山さん自身にジャズが、どれだけ大事だったかという話でしたけども、ジャズアーティストの中では、一番の、主の、もしくは、その作品的に大事な、アーティストというのは誰になりますか？
どれか一人と選ぶのは非常に難しいですけども、ジャズというよりもポピュラーに近いのかもしれないけど、やっぱりサッチモってのは偉大かなと思ってます。
Well, it's very hard to single out one artist, and this might be more pop than jazz, but Satchmo is a very big name.
Mm-hmm. And since we are going to be wrapping up the interview now, is there any personal message you would like to let your current fans or the future fans of your work to know? Any personal message you would like to tell them?
で、おしまいに、丸山さんの今のファン、もしくはこれからファンになる人たちに向けて何か個人的なメッセージがあったらばお願いします。
今年から新しい会社になったんで、今までと同じようであったり、今までにない冒険をもっとやっていきたいと思っています。多分そういうものが皆さんのところに届くのは来年か再来年だと思います。楽しみにしてください。
I started a new studio this year, and so some things will be the same, and I will be taking on a lot of new challenges as well. And you will probably be seeing the fruits of these labors next year at the earliest, and probably in 2 years. So I hope you can be patient and wait for these to reach you.
I almost forgot to ask this, and I should, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask a few questions about the new studio. Would that be okay?
で、聞き忘れてしまったので、
はい、
丸山さんの新しい、スタジオ会社のことについて少し教えていただけると嬉しいです。
はい。
First, what compelled you to leave Madhouse Studios?
そのマッドハウスを離れることになった動機っていうのは何だったんですか？
ちょっと今までのものもやっていきたいんですけど、もっと新しいこと、非常に難しいことに挑戦したいと思ってます。マットハウスは、まあ、若い別な人がつないでいってくれるので、ちょっとした冒険はマッパの方でやっていこうかなと思ってます。
I've always there were a lot of new things that I wanted to take on, but those would be more difficult challenges, and the younger people can take on the work that's been going on at Madhouse, but for all the new challenges and endeavors, that's something that I could do better at a new studio called at MAPPA.
The name of your studio, MAPPA, has a unusual meaning. Would you like to explain the concept behind the name and why you chose it?
そしてこの、MAPPA というのは、とても、その斬新な、意味があるとのことですけども、この名前のコンセプトについて少し教えていただけますか。
はい、一応日本語で裸一貫、ゼロからのスタートという意味を持ってます。
MAPPA has the connotation of starting from scratch, start naked in Japanese.
見て一応意味だけを厳密に ローマ字の頭文字を言っていけば、丸山の M です。アニメーションの A です。プロデュースの P です。プロダクト、僕がプロデュースするプロジェクトの PP ですね。で、アソシエーション、会社とマッパになります。
And if you take the literal for the acronym MAPPA comes from M for Maruyama, A for animation, P for produce, and P again for project or product, and A as an association, as a company, spelling out MAPPA.
So the basis of the studio is to be a rebirth of your artwork.Your art.
ではそのマリアマ作品の、リバース、再生を意味するということですね。
そういうことですね。
Yes.
And after Kids in the Slope, is there anything you can tell us about the next project you are working on?
そして、Kids on the Slope、アポロンの次の、企画というのは何か教えていただけますか。
いくつかもう具体的に動き出しているのも企画だけ先行しているのもありますが、それはまだ今の段階では発表できないです。
There are several projects that's gone into Greenlight production as well as others that are still in planning.There's nothing that I can publicly talk about right now.
今年中にはいくつかのタイトルが言えると思います。
But I think I will be able to announce a couple of the titles within the year.
We are looking forward to that.
And
well, thank you very, very much for the interview. And I hope that our audience has enjoyed the interview as much as I have enjoyed.Asking these questions, and I hope that you have enjoyed the interview. Have you enjoyed the interview?
楽しみにしています。そしてインタビューありがとうございます。私が聞き手のとなったのと同じくらい、この番組のオーディエンスも楽しんでくれていれば嬉しいです。またマリアン様にとっても楽しめたインタビューであれば嬉しいですけども、マリアン様楽しめたでしょうか。
ありがとうございます。よろしくお願いします。
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, You've been listening to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and my guest has been...
Maruyama desu. Maruyama deshita.
And this was your interpreter, T. Karahashi.
And good night. Welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm over here at NondeskCon 2012 with our special guest,
J. Michael Tatum.
So, J. Michael Tatum, who are you and what do you do?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm still trying to figure that out. Let's see if I can sum up. I'm a voice actor and adaptive script writer and sometimes ADR director, primarily based out of Texas with Funimation Entertainment. And I've done lots and lots and lots of things. In the voice acting world, I'm probably best known for roles such as Kyoyo Otori in Oran High School Host Club, Sebastian in Black Butler, which is a big one, a few things that are coming out soon, such as Control C, which I think is premiering actually here at this con as we speak. I also play Okabe Rintaro, or Ho In Kyoma, if you prefer, in the upcoming dub of Steins Gate, which will be released in just a couple of weeks. And many, many, many other things besides. As a writer, I've worked a great deal on Dragon Ball Kai and Dead Man Wonderland, other things. So, yes, we'd be here all day if I was trying to remember everything I've done.
Mm-hmm. So let's go first up into voice acting. How did you get into working with your voice?
Well, strap in. It's kind of a long story. Okay. It's funny, actually. I was really heavily into stage from childhood on, and well into my teens. I did stage work, community theater, that sort of thing all the time. Loved it. Just kind of grew up on the stage, really. And but for whatever reason, when the time came to sort of pick to carve out a career path for myself, I chose to not pursue acting because I think it just takes a very courageous person to do that, and I am not a very courageous person, so I kind of went the safer path and had a very different career that had nothing creative at all about it for years and years and years. Luckily, though, later acting seemed to find me again by pure luck, really, nothing more. I happened to know a gentleman named Christopher Bevins, a brilliant ADR director, writer, and actor with Funimation. He and I have been friends for a number of years, and while I really respected and thought what he did was great, because I've always been a huge anime fan, I never even conceived of it as a business I could get into, so I just sort of enjoyed it and appreciated it from the background, as it were. And like a bolt out of the blue, he called me one afternoon and asked if I would come and audition for him for a show he was working on at the time called Samurai 7, and I was deeply flattered, and I politely turned him down, because the idea of doing it again after more than a decade away from acting just terrified me. And luckily for me, though, he doesn't take no for an answer, and he got scarier and scarier over 2 weeks as I tried to beg off of it. And finally, he forced me to come in for what was a 4-hour audition. It was total ADR boot camp for me. I'd never been in front of a mic before. I'd never worked with a dub script. I'd never worked with animation, you know, matching flaps, we call the mouth movements and that sort of thing. And it was quite an education. And when we were done, I stepped out of the booth confident that I'd completely blown it and that he would leave me alone. and instead found out that I had actually been recording the first handful of episodes of the show and was now contractually obligated to return and finish out the characters. So that is how I became an actor. And slowly but surely, I began doing more and more on the side, and then was approached to do adaptive writing and directing as well, and now, you know, almost 7 years on, I can't really imagine doing anything else.
So you're kind of kidnapped into voice acting.
Sort of kidnapped into voice acting, exactly.
Like,
I was abducted into
cat.
It. That's almost exactly how it played out.
Oh, goodness. Did you get the cat back?
I got the cat back,
okay,
yes.
So you said that you worked a lot when you were younger on stage or so, but you didn't always have a stage voice.
No, I did not. In fact, for the longest time in my early childhood, I didn't speak very much at all until I was about 8 or 9 years old, because I had a debilitating speech impediment. And though I am from Texas, I have a rather neutral accent. One that kind of falls rather easily into that sort of British, that proper British, because my speech therapist, my first speech therapist, one of many, and probably my best, may she rest in peace, was a British lady. So I really learned to talk from a British lady with an enormous background in theater and musical performance, and that is kind of what propelled me to pursue stage as a young person, because, you know, she had many contacts within the industry, and once I found my voice and I began coming out of my shell, she sort of encouraged me to audition for various, you know, local community theater productions, and so that's what happens. So in a way, it's interesting, my performance in Black Butler as Sebastian is that accent, which is really fun to get to do. And man, I wish it, just something about the British accent just opened doors for you. People respond to it. I don't know why. It's like we're all hardwired to hear that proper English tone and just go, oh, yes sir, what would you like? You know, or just, it's just, you know, you lift your pinky up when you drink or something when you hear it. I don't know why. But that performance as Sebastian is kind of my very belated Valentine to the lovely old woman who taught me how to speak.
So before that you said you hadn't really started talking much until you were about 8 or so. How did you deal with that before?
I don't know that I dealt with it very well at all. Actually, when I did communicate with people, I tended to either do it in very, very terse staccato phrases that were still very painful for people to listen to because it took me forever to spit them out, or I typically carried around a pad and paper and would write what I wanted to say on it. I was a very introverted child because of it, and a very bookish child. I've read since, as long as I can remember, I've always had my nose in a book. And I grew up around a lot of books, and so luckily I had that to escape to, to get away from the fact that I just couldn't really relate to people or at least communicate with people very well at all when I was a child. And I suppose some of that still carries over, when that's sort of in your formative years, you never quite get over it, at least in my experience. And so I really dove into literature and poetry and things of that nature because all of these characters that I encountered on the page became the sort of surrogates for the flesh and blood friends I didn't quite have the courage to try to make because of my lack of a voice. So, it's a coping mechanism after a fashion, but one I wouldn't recommend.
Oh. So, what books were most influential? What were your best friends?
Oh, my best friends. Well, as a kid, I grew up reading things like, anything by Robert Louis Stevenson, of course, Treasure Island, all sorts of things. I mean, Shakespeare was probably my best love, still is very much a formative influence on me because I think one could spend an entire lifetime, 3 or 4 lifetimes reading Shakespeare and never get to the bottom of him. And I was encouraged to read it as a young man out loud a lot. And we often found, incidentally, that the stutter vanished as long as I was reading from a script. I think probably another foreshadowing of my future career. I loved that. I read a lot of I was fairly fluent in French as a young person, later learned to speak it, but I read it from a very early age because my grandmother was somewhat fluent in it as well. So all these old Tintin books that she had in original French, I used to read those. I used to read all kinds of stuff. I used to love the old turn of the century pulp fiction novels, but then later got into the more hardcore affair.
Like the Poe and Lovecraft and the people who...
Yeah, absolutely. Poe, Lovecraft.
The people who influenced them, like books like The King in Yellow and stuff, right?
Oh, The King in Yellow. Oh my God. Points to you for getting that. Oh my God. I wear no mask. No mask? No mask? Sorry. I love that you get that. Oh my God. Wow. You just made my life. I've never heard anyone ever reference The King in Yellow. Holy crap. I want a curse now. I'm so happy.
Oh, that's fun.
But yeah, I read a lot of that stuff. I read a lot of Kipling, the Jungle Books, some of my favorite books, and the Twice Told Tales,
and the Mars Chronicles that he did.
That was you're thinking of Burroughs. You're thinking Burroughs, the guy that
Burroughs.
No, there's very yeah. Burroughs. Also, Sax Rahmer, the guy that brought us Fu Manchu.
Oh yeah,
that wonderfully not very PC villain.
Pretty much.
But yeah, so yeah, all those things. And then later, I got, and all that was kind of, tempered with the great poets like Shelley and Lord Byron and all this stuff that I had a really, really wide reading. The rule of thumb, and my grandparents, who I spent a great deal of time with as a young man, because I was fortunate enough to live close, had this massive library. My grandmother taught literature and was also very just musical and all that. They had this massive library, and from as early as I could, the rule of thumb was if I could reach it on the shelf, I could read it. And they had a ladder. So
yes.
I had access to everything. Mm-hmm. It was really, really wonderful.
And did you ever try memorizing any of it?
Frequently. And I still do, especially poetry. I think it's really designed to be memorized, and it's difficult. In fact, I think that's really the only true way to possess a poem is to try to memorize it, because there's so many layers of meaning. You can't just get everything from just reading it once or twice. You have to really have it in your mind, and it needs to kind of become a permanent part of your psyche so that it's on free circulation, and occasionally new meanings or interpretations will suggest themselves to you in the middle of the night when you're not even thinking about the poem because it's now part of you.
Yeah, kind of like, for me, it's Khalil Gibran, the Prophet.
Yes.
Those
nice.
Are amazing.
Nice.
But yes. You do you do a lot of convention work and a lot of voice work and stuff. What do you think of Mondescon so far?
I love it. I really love it, and I'm I'm so hesitant to say this because it sounds like I'm just saying it because I happen to be here at the moment, but this is probably by far one of the best conventions I've played. And I've done a few in the past few years. I've have quite a few under my belt, strangely enough, but I love it. Everyone here, the atmosphere, everyone is so nice. Everyone is so cool, and I get people blow me kisses for no particular reason. But yeah, everything, it's a really well-run ship, but the atmosphere they create for the attendees, that's the most important criteria for me. I could really give a damn about how I'm treated as long as I have a place to sleep and some water. I'm pretty low maintenance. At least that's what I like to think.
Yes.
Maybe the truth is different, but it's getting to see really getting to come to conventions is, I think, the single best thing about what I get to do for a living, because it's wonderful to see that there is now sort of these little, for want of a better word, these little brigadoons, these little communities that crop up like mushrooms after a rainstorm, you know, that just for the weekend, where nerds like myself can kind of congregate under this blanket of security and just express themselves and be who they are and not worry about the outside world for a few days and not have to constantly justify their existence to people who don't get it. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love being part of that. I wish I had this when I was a kid, so I'm getting to have a second childhood coming to these things. And Indie K just does it right. They really do.
Well, it looks like we may have just a little bit more time for just one more question.
All
so
right.
This one's a little bit. This one's one I ask a lot of people, and you were talking about that security shell. I've noticed at conventions, there's a lot of energy out here at the convention, lots of positive energy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people when they get out of that protective blanket and go back into the normal, everyday ho-and-drum, you know, like they tend to clam up a little bit and to go back into a shell. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice to help them keep that energy there and cope with that?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that there's... Sometimes the best way to go about it is to... If your natural reaction is to be introverted and to sort of withdraw from the humdrum realities of everyday life when you leave a place like this, I don't think there's anything wrong with the impulse to withdraw from that, because I think reality as it's given to us by the larger world sucks. And I think by and large we are right to elect not to take part in it. So I like to say, just keep your imagination well fed on delusion. Cultivate privacy. As long as you have your friends and the people in your life, be they flesh and blood friends or people you read about in books or people you watch on the small screen or large, as long as what's up here in your head and in your heart has something it can channel out to, you know, who gives a damn what everyone else thinks? And if you don't want to engage in that, don't. That does not make you less of a person. There will always be places like this you can come to where that energy can come out. So, yeah, don't push it, don't stress it, don't worry. You're not less of a person because society thinks you're weird and because you're quiet.
And there's no problem with being weird.
Absolutely.
You're
not
among weirdos here. But yes, thank you very, very much for the interview.
Thank you. And, thank you. It's a pleasure.
This has been Philip Wesley, The Mile High Mouth, with Radio DMG, and we're here at NondesCon 2012 with our special guest,
J. Michael Tatum.
And good night.
Good night.
My computer froze. I haven't saved in over an hour. Try restarting.
Hey, Crago, heard you're having problems with your CPU.
It could be the router.
You should try restarting. Did you reboot it? Did you reboot it? Heard you're having problems with your CPU. Did you reboot it? Did you reboot it? We good? Hey, my son Charles not here. Kid is great with computers. Hey, my son Charles not here. Kid is great with computers. You should try restarting. Did you reboot it? Did you reboot it? Heard you're having problems with your CPU. Did you reboot it?
You should try rebooting.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, my son Charles not here. Kid is great with computers. Hey, my son Charles not here. Kid is great with computers. You guys see the game last night?
This is Dr. Stein, and I'm so glad you're listening to Radio DMG. Radio DMG.
I can't believe we're at Canterlot Gardens. With all that they've advertised it, this is sure to be the best con ever.
The convention.
You won't see me at the panels or around the dealer's hall. I'm too bashful at my very first convention.
The convention.
I'll be silent, but on Twitter, I will post about it all. And go check me out on Tumblr. I'm blogging the convention.
IRL to chat at the convention. The convention.
Bought a table.
Make it worth it.
I'll hack
it.
On my pricey handmade wares. Eager fanboys.
Only.
We'll buy this.
This is worth
Sloppy custom sold in pairs. And some wood saucy artwork. Sold under the table.
Questionable content here is socially accepted. Have an impulse spending spree right here at the convention. The convention.
I will show them my new cosplay that I've slaved on week by week. I will be the hottest thing at the convention.
The convention.
Win the contest, take a picture. I will have all eyes on me. I will feel like I'm a model. Here at the convention.
Show off that dish that you served last night in your hotel room. People are less critical here at the convention. The convention.
Been blogging, I've been tweeting about my awesome panel. My followers, they worship me. Wear a shirt of my OC. Perform for crowds of dozens. They'll shower me with plushies. I get to be a rock star here at the convention.
Feel like you're an A-lister for one fulfilling weekend. Big fish in a smaller pond here at the convention. Convention.
I've come to this convention full of ponies just like me. Cause the ones at home dislike displays of blatant nerdery. Now for once I'll feel like I'm a part of true camaraderie. Train card games and some LARPing with me at the convention.
Also brief acceptance by your colleagues at conventions.
I will meet all of my favorites at the VA meet and greets. I will plug my fan-made content for all of them to see. I am going to be their favorite and they'll hang out just with me.
Literally the best night ever. To the convention we must go. We're decked in swag from head to toe. Less than a week of time will somehow change our lives forever. Don't bring the folks from local news. Humiliating interviews at the convention.
Tweet to friends
at the convention.
Make a profit
at the convention.
Photo shoots.
See my fans.
An occasional first shout out.
Earn cash.
Feel hot.
Be cool.
Make friends.
I'm not.
At the convention, it will never get better than this. The convention.
After about 30 episodes, I wonder if people really think or realize that I'm kind of a bit of a troll sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Your recording device is very cool. I don't mean to get meta on people right away, but it's this little device and it has this wonderful microphone.
Hi, welcome Hello, sorry. Hello and welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm here at Non-Descon 2012 with...
I'm also Philip. No, I'm not. I'm Chuck. Huber. Chuck Huber. Chuck Huber.
So, Chuck Huber, who are you and what do you do?
I am an Anunnaki citizen from the planet Nibiru, and I've come here to pole shift your universe. No, I'm a voice actor. I started voice acting when I was 4 years old. No, 20? 24. Dragon Ball Z, Android 17, Garlic Jr., Emperor Pilaf. A bunch of other characters on that. And then I did Hiei and Yu Yu Hakusho, Dr. Stein and Soul Eater, Shao Tucker and Full Metal Alchemist, and lots of Austria in Hitalia, Hero in Shin Chan, something in Black Butler. I can't remember his name. I don't know. It'll come back to me. Yes. I'm an old man. Be nice.
Yes. So, aside from voice acting, you also do a lot of writing and directing.
I've done... fair bit of writing and directing. I wrote, in terms of anime, the first one I wrote all by myself. And when we say write, it's really script adapt, because you're adapting it from the Japanese translation. But the first one I wrote all by myself was Bakano. And it was fun because it was a period piece. So I got to be searching on the internet for all like these, you know, sort of cool period ways of putting things that would also fit the flaps. And, I also got to write on Sergeant Frog, which was probably one of my... And Hitalia. Hitalia and Sergeant Frog I wrote with Jamie Markey, and she's a very, very funny woman. And she and I would just make each other laugh, trying to find funnier and funnier jokes to put in. Because it kind of let us go with Hitalia, because it's historical, and so we had to sort of hit things from an American perspective instead of a Japanese perspective, because the comedy's different. What different countries mean is different, so... Those two were really fun. And the directing I did a long time ago, recently I've been directing more film work and have a movie and a web series that I'm a director of photography and assistant editor on that Brina Palencia is doing called The Troubadours. And we just premiered the latest episode, Hobbit Day, last night, which is cool because it was very Lord of the Ringsy.
Some of the other stuff that you've written, apparently you wrote something, helped co-write something called The Fragility of Seconds?
Yes, that was a movie we did. It was basically me and two other friends, Matt Tompkins, Julio Cedillo, and we hopped in a van with some film equipment and drove to Mexico and made a movie. That's pretty much all the preparation we had was, let's just throw film equipment in the van and drive. And it ended up winning top honors at the Houston International Film Festival, which was fun. And it's a fun bilingual sort of border drama. And my character was Scottish. I thought it was fun to have a Scottish character because I thought it'd be fun to try to speak Spanish with a Scottish dialect. ¿Dónde está el centro? Hay que tomar un taxi. And all the people in Mexico thought it was funny to hear me talk Spanish with a Scottish dialect. So I did that. And then I have another movie, Arbor Day, the musical, which Vic Mignon is in, Brina Palencia, Chris Sabat is, Okerchan's going to do the sound design once I finish the edit, which Brina and Paul are helping me on right now, sort of managing the finish on the production side. And it's awesome. It's got lots of great music in it, singing and dancing.
I noticed that you funded it with Kickstarter.
Yes, the last portion of it here has been funded by Kickstarter, and it's been, it was amazing when the Kickstarter thing happened. It's like an outpouring of, I just had my spit on the microphone, an outpouring of support, and the, I don't know, it's just good to have that backup. As an artist, you don't have people rooting for you when you're trying to make it to the next job, you know. So getting to have people behind you is really important.
Arbor Day the musical has an interesting backstory to it. Would you care to elaborate on it?
Yeah, it's a music. It's about a director putting on a theatrical musical. It's a and the musical he's doing is about September 11th. So it's essentially a September 11th musical comedy, which most people think, that's, you can't do that. And that's exactly why I want to do it, because people say you can't do that. And I have a friend who, when the idea came to me, I had a friend who lost someone in September 11th. Her dad was killed at the Pentagon. So I thought if I could pitch this movie to her, I couldn't approach all the victims' families, but I thought if I could pitch this movie to her and have her, she didn't necessarily have to buy into everything, but just the idea of that, a movie that sort of takes the myth of that day and tries to shred it down a little so it's not such a powerful, you know, tool for politicians or the media or government or whatever. And so I went to her dad's grave and then to the Pentagon with her, and she showed me, walked me through her day, that day and the next day when her father died. And after she told me the whole story and went through the whole thing, then it was time for my pitch. And it was the most nervous I've been giving a pitch in my entire life. But she loved it. She loved the idea of it. And so that's when I decided to do it. Actually, then I had a massive heart attack the next day and a quintuple bypass surgery. So it was another 3 months before I started filming.
Hmm. Was it difficult to get people to be in this?
Yeah, there was some resistance, and we had one, you know, a couple people quit. And but the more I involved other artists, the more I said, this is, I don't want to be a tool. I want to use you as a tool to sell some agenda. I just want to speak the truth about whatever it is you want to say about it. Because the movie mirrored the stage play that the director was doing in the movie, in that people were confused and hurt, and there's conflicted feelings, and, you know, and I said, that's just part of it. I said, I think we need to show that, and so we did, and we've got some really amazing stuff, really amazing scenes. I can't wait to get finished with it. It's so close. I was supposed to be finished by now, but my, now that I have backup, now that I have people managing me, I'm married, and I have 6 kids, and I'm a self-contracting artist, and I'm not very good managing myself, so it's good to have people backing you up.
Speaking about managing yourself, you seem to be very, very busy. How do you find the time to spend your time on your work and with your family?
Well, they miss me sometimes. There's seasons of my career. I mean, prior to Arbor Day and the heart attack, I had been doing more corporate things to fill the gap, like corporate training, and was doing a lot of the script writing, which you can carry with you anywhere. And after the heart attack, I just decided that I would go full steam into just being a producer and a director, and now an editor and a director of photography. And this will be 2 years this December, and it's taken me about 18, 19 months to even get myself back into that side of the business, but now things are picking up and things are looking... So my family's missed me a lot, and they've been very patient, but now that things are picking up, they'll get to see me more often. Mm-hmm. And I'd see them almost every day, and we do attachment parenting, so the kids are always in the bed with us. There's like... typical thing is to wake up in the morning and everybody's just sitting in the bed, you know, talking about what they're going to do that day or, you know, whatever. The youngest is 1. She sleeps in the bed with us, so I get to hang. She's the one, it's important for me to, like, keep a connection with her, so. Because otherwise they get scared. Who's the scary man with the beard? When I went to Africa, I came back and Sophia, or was it Max? I can't remember. I think it was Max. Didn't recognize me and started screaming because I'd been gone for like 6 weeks.
Oh, goodness.
And it was an important 6 weeks. But then, you know, they get over it.
Mm-hmm. So, with 6 kids, how do you come up with so many names for them? Do you just kind of eventually just start naming them after stuff in the room?
That's right.
This lamp.
This is water bottle. Over there is power strip.
Blanket.
Now, Kirsten does most of the naming. Well, when she's pregnant, we kick ideas back and forth. Like, I wanted Juliet.
Did you get Juliet?
No, she wanted Juliet. I wanted Juliet's name. I was fighting for Artemis. Uh-huh. And she nixed it. I wanted to name her Artemis. I didn't even get it as a middle name.
Oh.
But Juliet Artemis just kind of sounded weird, so she's Juliet Diane.
So yeah. No, none of that actually.
It's good. It's good. It was just Juliet's a beautiful. Juliet's perfect for it. I couldn't. But if we have another, it's Artemis.
You've heard it here first.
That's right.
So, going back to Arbor Day, the musical, and your heart attack, mm-hmm. do you feel your outlook on life changed a little after that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Even my kids noticed it. My son Gabriel, who's the sweet little teddy bear of a kid, came up to me. He said, I don't want to hurt your feelings, Dad, but I like you better after the heart attack. And I was like, doesn't it? No, you're not telling me anything I don't agree with, because it slows you down. It makes you... Like, physically, I could not get upset or anxious for, like, the first 2 months. Because if I did, I could feel it. You can literally feel it in your heart. And now that I'm, you know, healthy and running around like a madman, things recede back to something sort of normal or but you carry with you, hopefully, enough seed of the changes that you keep nurturing them and growing in that change. I'd say I'm less worried about where I'm going or what's happening next and way more just concerned with what's right in front of me instead of worrying about the past or the future. Mm-hmm. Past makes you depressed and the future makes you anxious. Mm. So the now is the best place to be.
Best place to be. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the place where you are, what do you think of Nondescon so far?
It's amazing. It's a really excellent convention. A lot of people told me it was excellent, but I've been doing conventions now for, I don't know how long, 10 years, and the newer cons, when they're getting, the complications of organizing something like a convention, especially an anime convention, you got the dealer's rooms, you got tables, you got artist alley, you got contests, you got judges, you got people wanting press interviews, you got registration, you got food, you got hotel bills, you got cars, there's so much that has to be done. Security, walkie-talkies, and, you know, just goes on and on. So for the staff to have things so well organized, you walk in to your room the first day and there's a book, and you open the book and it tells you everything that's happening. Tells you when you're supposed to be where, and gives you all the numbers. You get everything in one nice little book, and it's like this really cool. And then the fans here are really cool too. We were like, there are the prettiest people here. This is like the con with the prettiest people. I don't know what the deal is.
It's Denver.
It's Denver. That's what it is. Is it the Denver vibe?
Live here or move here?
I think it's the altitude makes you prettier or younger or something.
It's also that it's a little bit more difficult to breathe around here.
I think it's one of the healthier cities, too.
Yeah.
Has something to do with it.
Definitely.
It might be.
It's a very clean city, too. We're like, this place is so clean.
It works out for us and such. Yep. Mm. So, you've written several different types of stories and such. Which do you find easier to write, drama or comedy?
I think they're both equally as hard. Mm. I wrote a monologue for Arbor Day the musical that I was very proud of, but I don't feel like I really have a right to be proud of it because I wrote it in maybe, it's like a 4-page monologue, like a 4-minute monologue, and I wrote it in maybe 11 minutes. You know, it just came out of me and I just wrote it. And so some of those things you're not even in control of or in charge of, and those are nice. And that can happen with comedy or with drama. When you get stuck with drama, it's easier to fix that on set or with camera. It's easier to let the director or the actors fix sort of a dramatic moment. You need the narrative well crafted. But comedy, writing comedy, I think the key is having lots of people look at it, and if everybody thinks something's funny, then it's funny. And so you're like, okay, that joke works. writing in isolation is, I think, probably the hardest thing. Being able to write and show it to other people and have them change it and adapt it is the easiest, whether it's comedy or drama. That said, I think I like writing drama better. But I always try to find things that are funny in it, too. So.
Mm-hmm. And crowdsourcing it, essentially,
right,
with other people tends to eliminate a lot of problems many writers have with writer's block.
Right.
Would you say so?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're writing a web series for the Georgia Department of Education, and I was doing the first draft of the episode summaries, and so trying to get the narrative out. And I emailed Brina and I said, I need help with this. And literally all I needed was for her to sit on the phone with me for 45 minutes. And I'd pitch her an idea and say, okay, this kid has to have trouble in class. He's not getting along with his teacher. There's a problem. The mother's upset about it. What's the problem? What's the issue? And so we kick ideas back and forth. And you always know when, because someone will start with an idea and flip it back to you, and you flip it to them. And then during one of the flips, it's like you both go, aha, that's it. That's the one we want to use. And we did that on like three different plot points. It took like 45 minutes, and I was off to the races again. But I'd been stuck on those three problems for like 4 days.
Well, what is the a film about?
It's called Modern Teachers, and it's about teachers in Georgia. And the Department of Education wanted to do it to sort of promote their ideas or their initiatives, which we essentially will script within. The narrative will sort of address those issues because they want to do like roundtable meetings with parents to talk about the different issues that the webisode sort of touches on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a narrative way of approaching a topic, which is really smart of them.
Mm. So, I have a quick question about the Troubadours.
Sure.
Where did the inspiration for that come from?
That was Haley and Brina. I think it started with Brina's Kagura video where she roasted Chris Sabat as Kagura 7274, whatever her name is. And so it started with that, and I think Haley Esposito, her partner, had another idea, and so it was it's their baby. They brought me on to shoot the first episode and subsequent episodes after that as the director of photography. And I'm pretty good as a DP, but we've gotten professional DPs since then to make things look even better. I learned enough being a DP so that it'll make me a better communicator to DPs when I'm directing, because I'll be able to understand what the camera does and what I'm asking them to do. And where I found the most fun was in editing, getting to edit some of the episodes and try to fix some of my mistakes creatively, camera mistakes, and then also as we got better and better, seeing how the edit became easier and easier and allowed us to stretch the sort of color effects or actual effects or sound effects further and further, which is for we're getting better. We keep getting better as a team, which is... I was saying that, you know, I used to think that I wanted my talent to be better than everybody else's, but you get to a point where the only way your talent will get any more usefulness out of it is by being surrounded by people who are more talented than you.
Mm.
And that's, we all have gifts, but everybody is, you know, being surrounded with a team of talented people is really amazing.
Mm.
It's a lot of fun.
Speaking about being surrounded by people, I have a question about, an earlier answer that you gave me, why attachment parenting?
Attachment parenting is basically, it's vintage parenting, it's antique parenting, it's just about keeping the child close to your body for as long as possible. And I didn't do any of this, this is all my wife. Kirsten's the smart one, and I just defer to her opinion, or read the book she's reading, she'll give me a book to read. But, like, a great way of describing it is that when you sleep with a baby in the bed, and people always say, aren't you afraid you're going to crush the baby or roll over on the baby and kill the baby? No. And I think if you were like a horrible alcoholic, you probably shouldn't sleep with the baby because you will be drunk and something bad will happen. But you're very sensitive to where they are. And actually, they've found that because you have the baby in the bed with you, we don't have to wake up for feedings. We just stay asleep. You know, mom just rolls over and nurses the baby, and everybody stays asleep. Baby stays asleep, I stay asleep, she stays asleep. And then the other thing it does is you are right there if they get sick, if anything happens. And SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, happens a great proportion less in families that do family bed or attachment parenting, because you're constantly connected to the baby. And yeah, you like any two people who are in the same bed, you nudge each other or touch each other, so you're constantly aware of the other person's, you know, life.
Are any of the kids in school, and do you do a different kind of schooling than public school?
Yeah, we do homeschooling, and we have part of a homeschool co-op, and it's like all day Thursday, and Kirsten takes them to the home, and this is new this year. She had been doing, and I had been doing the lessons the previous years, but with the homeschool co-op, we don't have to plan anything, we don't have to grade anything, all we got to do is help with homework, so they get all their lessons for the week, plus they have other things with church and other art organizations that they do outside of the home. But yeah, so every Thursday they go and get their stuff.
Do they use a Becca, Bob Jones, or Saxon?
Saxon, definitely. Saxon's one of my favorites. Yes. I was a principal of a school for 6 years as well, and a teacher. And we use Saxon. I'm familiar with the Abeka curriculum. And I think some of this may be Abeka, or what's the other one? Excellence in Writing?
Yeah.
I think it's Excellence
in Writing. And also Bob Jones.
And Bob Jones, yeah. I'm not familiar with the Bob Jones one. But my favorite thing about homeschooling is just that it's so much less stressful, less work, less
drama.
Less.
You have to worry less about bullying.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about any of that, because your kids are, and people worry about socialization, and yeah, you can't. Our kids will tell us if they've been in the house too long,
mm-hmm.
and they need their friends. But you know, I mean, high school and junior high—the only place that environment ever exists again in life is in prison. You know, I mean, like, the giant public high schools and public junior highs are, you know, it can be a very scary place for kids. And it's because it's not a natural system. It's not natural to separate people by their age. That's the only place we separate people by age, is in these schools. Because it's more natural for children to be around adults sometimes, or older kids, or younger kids. And that way you have to, you know, adjust to all of humanity. But when you Lord of the Flies everyone in a single class, and you're, you know, cohesive in that way, it becomes...
It really doesn't set you up for the real world.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. If it does, I've been in some office environments that remind me of a high school, and I don't like those either. But that's because they don't know any other way to work it. You know, the managers are the teachers, and the workers are the students, and there's cliques and all that. And, you know, that's just not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that socialization and such, here's a question we do ask a lot of guests, and I'm going to ask you this one here. I've noticed at conventions there's a lot of energy that people tend to have.
Sorry.
There's a lot of energy that people tend to have at conventions. You see them running around doing all sorts of stuff, but when they get out of the conventions, they tend to clam up or just go into a bit of a shell. Is there any advice that you could give our listeners about how to avoid shelling up?
Just to be a good friend. I always say, you know, you may want to be friends with someone, but the best way to have a friend or a group of friends is to be a good friend. So you may see someone who needs a good friend, and then you be that good friend, and then suddenly you're surrounded by friends. And it's not about being accepted into one group or another. You have all the power yourself right now. You just start, find someone who needs a friend and be their friend, and suddenly you have friends. It's very simple. There's always people who want friends. I want friends. I mean, we all want friends. Even when you get older, you have friends move away, and then you don't have that thing you used to have because they live in Seattle or whatever now, and so then you want to develop new friends. And I mean, it doesn't ever stop. I'm sure as we get older, we'll still have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for right now. I'm Philip Wesley, the Mahi Mouth, And my guest has been?
Chuck Huber.
And did you have anything else to say before I say goodnight?
Spatula.
Spatula.
That's all I have to say. Mm-hmm.
And good night.
Good night.
Sunken city, you're a billion light years distant, and the stars look very pretty from Relay. So close and yet so far away. E-R-E-A. Cthulhu Fatagin, or is that Cthulhu Fatine? I can never quite remember, 'cause I'm not in my right mind since I met you. No one corrupts the way you do. You know it's true. Oh, it's what you'll do to me. Oh, and all humanity. Oh, you'll rise up from the sea. Oh, kill everyone slowly, except the ones like me. Hey there, Cthulhu, I've been studying your gospel. The Necronomicon, it gives me nightmares, something awful, where I see the death of all reality. It fills me with glee. So when the stars are right, you'll come and do your worst, but that's okay, because I know you'll lead the cultists like me first when you get here. I know that day is drawing near. I have no fear. Oh, it's what you'll do to me. Oh, and all humanity. Oh, you'll rise up from the sea. Oh, kill everyone slowly. A billion light years seems so far below the sea. Beyond the stars of these humans' putrid souls, you'll drink your fill. The fools will all make fun of me, but I'll just laugh maniacally, 'cause no one's ever suffered like they will. Cthulhu, I can promise you that by the time this cult gets through, the world will never, ever be the same. Praise your dark name. Finbli McLunar, Cthulhu, Rilyeh, Wagnar, Fatagin. Boy, that's really quite a mouthful. Can't quite cram it in my noggin. Not today. I try to say it anyway. I feel my soul begin to fray. Still I await that fractious day. Cthulhu Calais. But me, everyone but me. Oh, 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 oh.
So, that's where we are currently. That's three interviews down, and we have six more interviews to go, which we'll put in another episode, along with newsity and such. So, I like saying so quite a bit. Anyways, you know, I really just make these episodes for myself. Yeah, this podcast is for me. That's all for right now. We'll be recording more later today, and by the time this gets up, I should have already finished recording the next one, and then that'll go up, and madness. Time to go home and get some sleep. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, here for Radio DMG, episode 31, October 25th, 2012. Good night.
barracks? I'll get the keyboard.
What? Wait, listen!
Yeah, let's go. What's it say? Sing out, sister.
Marceline, is it just you and me in the wreckage of the world? That must be so confusing for a little girl. And I know you're going to need me here with you. But I'm losing myself and I'm afraid you're going to lose me too.
Oh yeah, keep it going.
This magic keeps me alive, but it's making me crazy, and I need to save you. But who's going to save me? Please forgive me for whatever I do when I don't remember you.
Wow, I wrote that? Hot stuff.
What? You don't remember what it means? Look!
Marceline, I can feel myself slipping away. I can't remember what it made me say. But I remember that I saw you frown. I swear it wasn't me, it was the crown. This magic keeps me alive, but it's making me crazy.
What is going on in there?
I have no idea.
Da 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 da